TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope you like peaches, because I brought you a whole crate from my last visit to Georgia.
Ooh, millions of peaches. Peaches for me. But just, what's funny is I don't even like peaches at all.
Okay,
I
do not like all right.
The flavor, well, I don't like peaches, so.
Okay. Okay, well, maybe you don't need the warning I was about to give you, which is that you might not want to eat those, because I haven't been to Georgia in more than 25 years, and that fuzz you see on there, it isn't supposed to be gray. But who knows, if you eat those, you might transform into some other species.
Please, let's not. Again, I can't take it, Chris.
All right. Yes, everyone, we are going to be talking today about extinction. It is the third episode of season 3 of Enterprise, or maybe the first episode of season 1 of Star Trek Enterprise, depending on what you make of the title change, which happens with this episode. When the series originally aired, though you'd never know it because the Blu-rays, the DVDs, I think Netflix, Paramount Plus, everybody has Star Trek Enterprise all the way through the season. But here we are with Extinction, a story written by science advisor Andre Bormanis, which I think will play into what we discussed today. Here is a quick overview of the story. Arriving at a dangerous planet not clearly marked, Enterprise crew find themselves being transformed into primitive creatures who apparently have amazing scientific prowess. Luckily, the mutagenic virus created by this civilization's geneticists doesn't work on T'Pol, thanks to her Vulcan K-cells. Otherwise, all would have been lost before the end of Act 1. Will Dr. Phlox find a cure in time? It's Star Trek meets Planet of the Apes, long before IDW did an official crossover, in this peach of an Enterprise episode. So, Matthew, we got a lot of stuff going on in this episode that could have given us a very interesting story, but didn't. So where do you want to start?
You know, I think that, Chris, the place that I would like to start with this is the beginning of the episode itself. Because, you know, the episode begins with Trip and T'Pol in her quarters. You know, he's coming to get more neuropressure. We get the sense, and from T'Pol, she mentions him not being there for the last couple of sessions. He talks about him being super busy, which obviously we've seen in the previous episodes, what they've been going through. And I think the thing that I really like about this beginning is the way in which they're building on the storyline that they've started with these two. And you can tell that there is still a little bit of an awkwardness between them because of the intimacy that this is creating, that I think neither of them is necessarily ready for, right? And I think the other thing that I really like is that there's also this moment between them that moves them one degree closer in their relationship mm-hmm. by Trip bringing her a gift. Something mm-hmm. that comes from his area of the country with these peaches and her trying the peach, which, you know, for Vulcans to eat with their hands, not something that they do very often.
That's a good point.
And so what's happening here is very interesting because it really is very intimate, especially for T'Pol to be doing this with Trip by eating with her hands, right? Mm-hmm. And trying something that she might not necessarily have tried I think in the first season, right? She kind of has stuck her nose up at human food.
Well, she tried to eat a breadstick with chopsticks.
Exactly.
I'd like to see her try to eat a peach with chopsticks.
Right. And so all of this is great character development, right? The fact that we're bringing these two characters together and we're continuing this storyline. We didn't just let it drop. And so I really like that. And so I think that's incredibly strong in the episode here to begin with. The second part that's connected with that is that we also have the beginning of the episode where we learn that Archer has been poring over this Indy database. And we learn a lot of things about Archer. One, I think we're starting to see his obsessive compulsive disorder in some ways building in this episode by the fact that he's been working on this nonstop. We also, though, see that Archer's incredibly capable with his ability to, when he talks about breaking down their coordinates and figuring out their star chart. So, you know, this man wasn't just made captain because his dad was Henry Archer. This guy's incredibly smart. And so I really enjoyed that about this episode. So what's fascinating to me is in all honesty, I think that about 5 minutes of this episode sets up a really interesting premise. And then I think, you know, that it turns into something that we'll talk about later. But I don't know, what do you think about that with this, the idea of just thinking about these, like, maybe first 4 to 5 minutes?
Yeah. Well, it's the first 4 or 5 minutes plus, I don't know, 20, 30 seconds in the middle and 90 seconds at the end that all set up an interesting premise, but Barmanis doesn't do anything with it in the script, and apparently no one looked at it as a story editor and said, okay, we need to make adjustments to this and rework this, which is kind of frustrating because I think that if I take it, so in the order you mentioned here, absolutely, I agree with you about Tripp and T'Pol. The beginning of the story with them really advances their relationship and does it in such a natural way. First of all, you feel the jump that they've taken, as you describe, in their intimacy, their comfort with one another, and how they're coming together. And we'll see how that plays out, of course, as the series goes on. But that part I thought was well written and very well acted, and works very well for the character development. And then what you say about Archer and what he's researching also makes sense for his character, and I think it helps to prevent the Zindi arc from being this chase to find the Zindi to exact revenge on them for the attack, and of course to stop them from using the stronger weapon that they're developing. So it puts that more thoughtful Star Trek element on the story. And you see that again at the end. So we get to that last part where Archer has this conversation with Phlox about not wanting to destroy the last bit of this virus because it's the last thing in the universe that is a remnant of this low-tech civilization. And therefore, we shouldn't destroy it, and we certainly shouldn't be going around destroying other civilizations when we're on a mission to save our own. But that comes at the very end. It's literally the final bit of dialogue in the entire episode, which is, it's puzzling because that actually is needed to make the rest of the story mean something, including the part in the middle, which I mentioned, which is when Archer has this dream and he finds the city that they're searching for, Urquhart, and you see that there was this thriving civilization there at one time.
Right.
So you need that piece and the final bit, you need those two things to then build out a story that actually has a Star Trek message to it and actually can interest the viewer and pull you along through the narrative, you know, and that's separate from the Tripp and T'Pol thing, which is another part of the series that's going on where you need to develop characters on an ongoing basis which they do. So you've got these two elements here.
Yeah.
But once they get down to the planet, it just very rapidly de-evolves, which is perfect for what happens to the characters as well as the plot, into this sort of, it's a nonsensical story from a scientific standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, and nothing really happens. You've got this drawn out 45-minute episode with, I don't know, right, 5 minutes of story, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I was thinking about this, when I was rewatching the episode, you know, I think that one of the things that doesn't work is that we're telling this story in season three. Mm-hmm. Instead of season one or season two. I think it works better in that, because this story is so focused on the Zindi storyline. Mm-hmm. And so this story just feels out of place, because we don't actually, the thing about this is we don't actually connect this back ever again to the rest of the Zindi storyline arc. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing too that really feels out of place here. And that's kind of frustrating, because it does feel as though this is one of those episodes when you're talking about doing 24 episodes, 23 episodes, whatever, a season. This is definitely one of those episodes we just didn't need. You know, this, mm-hmm, this absolutely 100% did not deserve to exist as an episode in this season, because, mm-hmm, it doesn't fit the rest of the season. You know, there are other standalone episodes in this season that I think probably could have also been excised, but at least they're more interesting. Mm-hmm. This one, I think it just isn't. And, you know, one of the things that you had written on the outline, which I thought was really interesting, is when Keith DeCandido did his rewatch, he had mentioned, mm-hmm, that he thought, you know, this could be a little like a horror movie version of The Inner Light. Mm-hmm. And instead we get this. And I think one of the things, like you mentioned, is unlike The Inner Light, we don't really learn anything else that's interesting, mm-hmm, about the civilization. There's nothing about it, again, that connects with the overarching storyline of the, mm-hmm, Zindi. And therefore, again, you're just kind of left with, okay, why are we doing this episode? And I really do think that that's one of the reasons it has such an incredibly terrible rating with fans. Mm-hmm. Is because of where it is. Because otherwise, this does seem like an episode that just about any Star Trek series could do, especially Voyager, TNG, Enterprise. I mean, this feels, mm-hmm, like one of those stories that would happen, right? Because, mm-hmm, the scientific idea of it is not all that uninteresting, that a species would try to elongate itself through this type of process. I mean, that's, mm-hmm, incredibly interesting idea, scientifically, and science fiction wise, right?
Yeah,
it's just
right,
executed kind of terribly in this episode.
Yeah. Executed kind of terribly is a way.
But is that, I think, the episode title, Chris?
I think that is a perfect episode title for this podcast. But I also think it explains this episode very well, because I suspect, I said up front that I feel like maybe there were no story editor eyes on this episode, because, I mean, look, if you think about it, go back to Deep Space Nine. How many times have you heard Ira Stephen Bear say that we got this draft, we looked at it, and we liked this idea in there, but it really needed to be reworked because it just wasn't working as it was. And they rewrote the episode and they made something from it. And I feel like that certainly didn't happen here, because if someone read through this episode and looked at its weaknesses, they would have tightened it up in some way that made it flow a little bit better.
Exactly.
But the execution part, you know, and the other thing that gets me, there are many things that get me about this episode. One is that it was written by Andre Bormanis, who was the science advisor, science consultant for the franchise for season 7 of The Next Generation, and then all of Deep Space Nine and all of Voyager. this is the person they turn to when they have questions about science. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I think Andre Bormanis doesn't know what he's doing with science. I know he does. This episode, it's a kind of puzzling concept because what you said about it being an interesting science and science fiction concept for a civilization to try to save itself by creating a way to solve its problem of infertility through creating some sort of virus that would rewrite something in the genetic code. It is really interesting if they're doing it to themselves. But the idea that it would rewrite alien species and turn them into Lokek, I don't really know how that would be possible. But I'm willing to go along for the ride as a science Sure. fiction concept, right? That doesn't bother me, actually. But what I don't understand is that the Lokek, as they're presented, doesn't mesh with the Lokek that we see in Archer's dream. The Lokek that we see when Archer has the dream and he finds Urquhart and he sees the city looks like a thriving, sophisticated civilization that collapsed, and in their desperation, they created this virus mm-hmm. to try to figure out how to save themselves. They don't look like people who would be fighting over grub-filled fruit. Mm-hmm. They don't look like people yeah. who would have these animalistic movements and inability to communicate in a more sophisticated way with one another or others that they meet. And so there's just this disconnect there that I think that's one of the execution elements in the mm-hmm. way that the actors chose to portray right. the Lokek yep. that causes the whole promising premise of the episode to collapse very mm-hmm. early on, and it never recovers yep. from that.
See, I will say that I do believe that actually that makes a lot of sense, because mm-hmm. if you're transforming somebody, genetically altering their DNA to make them like a, you know, a species, another species completely, mm-hmm. what you can't program into that is the advancement of mm-hmm. a species over, you know, and in Star Trek, of course, you know, the evolutionary process, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so what they're being shown as is who these people were originally, probably who knows how long ago. Mm-hmm. That's yeah, my so. That's my yeah. kind of like headcanon idea, because again, yeah. I'm just kind of taking Star Trek's scientific ideals and applying them here. But I get what you're saying, because it's like, and this is the thing that makes this so interesting, is that, and again, it's just not explored very well, but that they had this incredibly interesting idea that turns out really badly, because you can't overcome that problem, right? Mm-hmm. You can't genetically alter somebody to be what they're not. Or you can't genetically alter someone to be at a certain point in the evolutionary history, right?
Sure.
And have all the knowledge, right? Yeah. You just can't do that part, you know, because that involves then consciousness transformation of a specific person, rather than just genetically altering somebody into a different species. And so you would be just transforming them into the base of that species, which then would take who knows how long to achieve maybe what they did before. But you would never know that for sure, because you can't control then the evolutionary process for those characters. Yeah, so, right. That's the thing that, again, this episode doesn't quite deal with, because when you start to think about those realities, you're like, oh, that's a problem. And then the biggest problem is that you're thinking about those realities because the episode doesn't do a good enough job of ameliorating those issues in your mind so that you aren't thinking about that stuff.
Yeah, right. And in fact, it's sort of, it what is said in the dialogue creates the issue in the first place, which makes you start thinking about, because your explanation makes perfect sense and actually would be closer to the reality of science if it were even possible to rewrite the DNA of another species without killing them, which is probably what would happen. But just suppose you could. Yeah, the idea that what you would end up with would be transformation into another species on a purely biological level, I guess, without the intelligence that comes with millennia of evolution and development of civilization and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But in the episode, Phlox is speculating because he wasn't there. He doesn't know for sure what they did, but he says that the virus was apparently designed to rewrite the DNA of its host to transform any humanoid it infected into another species. And then it's later explained and implied that the purpose of it was that the Lokek themselves were dying. So they wanted to transform other humanoid species into Lokek as a way of ensuring that their species would live on and their civilization would live on. And so if that's your goal, you wouldn't want to be converting other humanoids into a state of Lokek that goes back thousands of years, and then you have to rebuild the civilization, right? And it also made me think, because of what this virus does, I'm going to be jumping towards the end of our outline here for a moment because it fits well here. Because of what this virus does, it made me think of the Borg, because the Borg use their nanoprobes to transform humanoid species into Borg. And that's how they perpetuate their species. There are no Borg, right? Borg are beings from thousands of species that are all transformed into this one thing that we now call the Borg. And that also made me question what I think is, on the one hand, it's the saving grace of the episode, which is the last second save, that final 90 seconds where Archer and Phlox discuss the virus, and Archer asks Phlox to preserve the virus because it's the last remnant of the Lokek, and if it's destroyed, then the Lokek will entirely cease to exist in any form. But Archer never would. Certainly Starfleet does not apply that thinking to the Borg, because the Borg are seen as a purely destructive threat. Mm-hmm. But what this virus does to other worlds, which is described by the other aliens here who want to eradicate the virus, it does the same thing. So it's a completely different approach to what seems like the same threat being presented by something that rewrites whether it's the DNA or whether it's some other aspect of a being's body, it still rewrites them and transforms them into something else.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what's interesting about this is the difference between the Lokek virus and the Borg nanoprobe virus is that there's always a piece of you still left in the Borg, whereas this does seem to, after time, completely erase who you used to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's the thing that is in some ways a little bit scarier than the Borg virus, you know, because we watch Borg be able to be released from the collective and find themselves in some way again, right? Mm-hmm. They're not completely gone. It's just as though their human consciousness is completely pushed back to the background and they can't overcome, right? And so I think that's the thing that I find incredibly interesting about this. And again, I think the thing that makes it pretty sad is that this is a great science fiction idea that just mm-hmm. isn't given life in a way that makes really good sense. I think that's the frustrating part of it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's an interesting premise for a story. Absolutely an interesting premise for a story. And it's just so poorly executed that I went in. I've watched this episode many times because I guess I like pain, which is how Linda Park described the experience of wearing the makeup for 14 hours a day to portray what she called primitive sort of super strength alien lizards when she talked to Star Trek Monthly way back. But I watched it again going into prep for this discussion, and I went into it thinking, surely I can find some good things in this episode, and it's not as bad as I remember it being. And I say that every time I watch it, and I went into it that way again this time. And right off the bat, they're transformed into aliens. They're doing all these jerky, weird motions as aliens, and maybe for the first 30 seconds of that, it's interesting. Oh, what's going on? But after, I don't know, 20 or 30 minutes of watching them act this way, you feel like, okay, I've had enough of this portrayal of the Lokek, because nothing is happening. Like, nothing is going on for most of this episode. And then we get to the point where for a second, I thought Phlox was watching some kind of music video from the 80s. Like, maybe it was a Nirvana video or something. I don't know, where transformed Malcolm is in the containment in the decon chamber thrashing around. But you see him on this little view screen up the corner. It's just so like, what is going on here? And Phlox's frustration with Trip and the decision making about what to do and needing to find a DNA sample and all this. I love John Billingsley. I think he's such a brilliant actor playing Phlox in this series in general, because there is something natural about the way he portrays that character that he's playing an alien, and he gives it this somewhat alien feel within the context of a crew that's almost entirely human, you know, apart from T'Pol. But there's something so human about his expressions and his voice and his just gestures and all. And the like quiet exasperation that I feel from him about the situation and how the rest of the crew is handling it echoes my exasperation as I watch this story, knowing that this could have been a really interesting story, and instead we got this.
Yes. Yes. I mean, 100%. I don't know. The crazy thing about this episode is, one, that it would make a great Star Trek episode if it wasn't in this season.
Yeah.
And it was executed more competently.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the thing. And it is frustrating because as a Star Trek fan, you can see the why of this episode. Again, like you mentioned, the very end of this episode is the why. You know, this idea of that this is the last vestige of this race, right? And I even like the idea of what they accidentally create. They created this virus that then they couldn't control, and it didn't really do what they wanted to. And so there's this whole other side of it that you could have played with, like the scariness of playing God and all of this kind of stuff. So there's great questions here. They never really get to the good questions. And what you end up with is a really bad Planet of the Apes knockoff.
Mm-hmm. I think what they should have done is, especially given the opening with Archer and his research into the Zindi, is that it should have been discovered very early on that this virus was created by this race to try to preserve themselves, and it's the last vestige of this race and the fact that they ever existed in the universe. And Archer wants to preserve it, as he says at the end of the episode. And Archer is not one of the crew members. Maybe Trip goes down instead of Archer and gets transformed. Because what you need is you need the conflict between Archer and Phlox over what to do with the virus. You need Archer's desire to uphold the basic ideals of Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future of what Star Trek, what humans would be, of finding a new civilization and respecting it and trying to find a way to preserve it. And then Phlox's understanding as a doctor of the danger that this presents. And then build a story around that instead of having the one person who seems to actually care about preserving the civilization be locked away and unable to even know what's going on for the whole episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's just plenty of places where this episode just could have been done better, and it wasn't. And I do think that their biggest mistake in this was trying to add stories in this season that don't directly tie in a very good way to the overall arc.
And yeah, I think you can do
that's
it.
That's the
though.
Hard part.
Yeah, but if you look later on in the season, we get North Star, right?
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. Yes.
You know, North Star is also essentially a standalone episode, and it's a good episode.
Yeah, and I would agree. I like that episode.
You know, I would say, I know that you've not watched it, but Discovery season 5, as Discovery does every season, they've got a season long arc going on. But I have to give them credit, no spoilers, but I have to give them credit in this season for finding a way to tell a number of standalone stories like we would get in past Star Trek, especially like we would have gotten in Deep Space Nine, where there is a little bit of the overall narrative for the season, for the larger story arc going on, but most of the story just stands on its own. And it's, you know, it's an interesting Star Trek story. And they found a way to do that. And I actually think that the fifth season of Discovery has a lot in common with the third season of Enterprise in the way that they're searching for something, the way that the story has to unfold gradually, and then they give us stories where the crew has to stop here and there along the way. In this case, in Enterprise, it's the Delphic Expanse, and you have the opportunity to tell some other stories that don't lead to a relentless drive of the narrative like has happened in Discovery in earlier seasons. So I think you can do it. It's just, it has to be executed well. And this one is clearly not. And its placement, like you said, in the season, you know, I would probably, if I were going to do this and I'm going to execute it well, I think I would still push it deeper into the season instead of having it be the third episode in the early stages of setting up what's actually going on with the Zindi.
Yeah, I mean, and no, I agree with you, because I do think that one of the things that this episode could have done is been an interesting, and it could have been an interesting standalone episode because of the fact that, you know, again, the episode at the very beginning, it sets it up well in the sense that we don't know what's going on. We barely know anything about the Delphic Expanse. And so therefore, our whole exploration here is on a knife's edge. We don't know what's going to happen. And so to then move to this and end up in a place where we realize we didn't want to be, that's not a bad idea. That's actually pretty interesting. And unfortunately, again, it's just one of those things where they just never really can find the way to make the story come alive the way you would want it to if it's going to do that. You need the storyline to be riveting if you're going to pull us away from the main storyline of the episode, which is, you know, again, that's where I think North Star succeeds more so than fails, where this one, I think, just across the board, it just kind of fails.
All right. Well, I feel like we both just gave final thoughts as part of our last little point there. But do you have any additional final thoughts? And what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, I don't have any final thoughts, really. I do think that this is, unfortunately, a poor episode. I think just for the very beginning and the very end of the episode, I'd probably give it 1.5 coconuts of larva, because there's some kernels of interesting ideas here, and there's some nice character development, but otherwise it's such an incredibly forgettable episode, and it's not one that I don't think anybody really desires to go back to again. And so yeah, it's one of those things that I after this rewatch, it's if I never see this episode again, it's not being mean, right? It's just that I don't need to see this episode again. And so, yeah, we're just at that point with that, and that's okay. So what about you, Chris?
Well, yeah, like you said, we don't need to see this episode again, right? Because there's nothing in here that matters for... Well, there's one thing in here that matters, the Trip and T'Pol relationship. Other than that, there's nothing in here that matters for the Zindi arc. So if you don't see this... You're not going to miss out on anything. It's not like, oh, I'm not sure what's going on here further down in the season because I didn't see Extinction. That's just not going to happen to you. So, yeah. And the other thing on the Blu-ray special features, Brennan Braga said that this is one of the singularly most embarrassing episodes of Star Trek I've ever been involved in. And I can understand how he would feel that way. I have to say, that's maybe my final thought.
I do think the question would become by the end, would you rather watch this episode or would you rather watch the very final episode of Enterprise?
Oh, I'd much rather watch the very final episode than this one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tough call for me.
Yeah.
So.
Now, Andre Bermanis plays a civilian number one in that final episode. He's, you know, one of the many people, including our friend Larry Nemechek, who is sitting in the audience as Archer comes out and gives his speech at the end of that episode that shall not be named. Yes. So, all right. I'm going to give this episode one active DNA sample.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Extinction. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It's a group there intended to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts, so we like to keep it there for our listeners, and therefore... please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum. Once you're in, you'll find a poster on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email if you'd like to do that. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will make its way through the Delphic Expanse to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to have that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not taking bites out of peaches and then putting them back in the bowl, where can people find your active DNA?
Oh, well, you can find me all over the place on social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, I am here on the network outside the Star Trek Talk in the 602 Club talking about all of those franchises we love outside of the Star Trek series. And you can also find me with some more Star Trek Talk over on The Orb, The Artificial Tango, Saddle Up, and sometimes Literary Treks. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with a couple of shows. One is all about the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, and that's called Owl Post. And you'll find me over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out how to get that larva between your teeth out, where can people find you?
Oh, God. Yeah, you need some heavy duty floss for that. Luckily, yes. Floss keeps, he actually made his own. And he keeps it, it's just a dispenser.
Oh, he's got that special silkworm floss.
Exactly.
It does the trick.
It really does. And he keeps a dispenser by the door to sick bay, and it's free. You just go in and take however much you want. Thank you, Flox.
Oh, my goodness.
When I'm not cleaning my teeth, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you. You can also find me in mini episodes in the back catalog. And you can find me on social media if you'd like to chat about Star Trek. You can find me everywhere. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. But you can find me in all the newfangled venues. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to get involved and how to support the network. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without the support of our listeners. So thank you to everyone who is helping us right now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time. We're going to slap on our space lingerie as we talk about Rygene.
Okay. Well, Chris, I guess let's go.